Hey, I wanted to tell everyone before we started this show that on April 5th, 2 weeks after this episode airs, we are taking a break. So there won't be an episode that week. But on April 19th, John should have an episode ready for us. We added a couple of more breaks this year to give us time to come up with ideas and get them written and recorded and edited and posted. So no episode on April 5th, but there will be one on April 19th. And now on with the show. Welcome. Please accept Jim and John's invitation to join them as they once again ask each other, what do you think about... Hey, John, what do you think about the possibility that some prehistoric animals exist yet today? Wait, before you answer, let me note, I'm not talking about coelacanths or sharks or crocodilians. I'm thinking of the more exotic fauna, like real-life dinosaurs.
Well, at the risk of sounding like a 10-year-old, I'd be awesomely thrilled by that idea, right? I mean, when I was a kid growing up, we lived in Chicago, and we used to go to the Field Museum all the time, and they loaded with dinosaur skeletons, right? And I was absolutely enthralled with that whole thing. And so I frequently imagined dinosaurs being real. As we've gotten older and we've paid attention to some of the cryptid stuff, right? Isn't there a brontosaurus in Africa somewhere?
Mukele Mbembe.
Yeah, Mukele Mbembe. And he's supposedly real, right? And we've got Nessie, who could be a plesiosaur, right? So, I mean, people do see these kinds of things. And it's always been intriguing to me.
Yeah, it has. And there have been reports in recent history that indicate that these survivals are possible.
How recent do you think is recent history?
Is 132 years ago recent enough?
Yeah, I'd take something more recently. I mean, but yeah, 132 years is pretty recent. I can work with that.
Well then, cast your imagination back to the dying days of the Old West. A time of blue skies and endless horizons when cowpokes were still riding the range on horseback. And the horse's carriage had not yet ruined the roadways.
Cowboys still ride horses on the plains, right?
Work with me here. I'm painting a picture.
Well, okay.
Let's discuss the 1890 pterosaur terror.
The pterosaur terror? Did you do that?
Yes.
Please do then.
On Saturday, April 26th, 1890, the Tombstone Epitaph ran an article entitled, A Strange Winged Monster Discovered and Killed on the Huachuca Desert.
Hang on a second. This is not an editorial comment. I mean, the Tombstone Epitaph was really the name of the newspaper in Tombstone, Arizona?
Yes.
That is an awesome name.
Yeah, I'm sure someone on the staff was a witty guy.
Anyway, they've got pterodactyls flying around or something?
We'll find out. The story opened with the line, a winged monster resembling a huge alligator with an extremely elongated tail and an immense pair of wings was found on the desert between the Whetstone and Huachuca Mountains last Saturday by two ranchers who were returning home from the Huachucas. The flying lizard, or whatever it was, had evidently already flown quite some distance because it was making short, bounding flights with intermittent landings, as if it was extremely fatigued but determined to reach its destination.
That's an interesting observation, because I think nowadays that's how they think they got around. Like in movies, they fly like birds, right?
Yeah.
But they think they were actually walking around most of the time on all four limbs.
With the wings kind of bent backwards. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then they hop, and they could hoppy glide kind of thing.
The two ranchers were, as you can imagine, shocked by the sight.
What the fuck?
However, once they remembered that they were both armed with Winchester rifles,
shit, we got guns,
they, quote, regained sufficient courage to pursue the monster, end quote.
Yeah, there's nothing quite like a Winchester to give you backbone, right? Especially when you got one and your potential adversary does not.
Indubitably. Well, the men gave chase to the creature, following along its bouncy path.
Okay, makes sense.
Even though the thing appeared to be exhausted, it evidently was making good time during its short little flights, because the cowboys did not catch up to it for several miles. Once they were close, they opened fire upon the monster and claimed to have wounded it. The flying creature was having none of this, however, and turned on the two ranchers, probably hoping to frighten its attackers off.
Well, good for him, yeah.
Hell yeah, good for him. Unfortunately, though, due to the beast's severe exhaustion, the men atop their fresh mounts didn't have trouble ducking and dodging its counterstrikes.
Oh, man, this sounds like a Ray Harryhausen epic, doesn't it?
Soon, one of the shots, or a combination of them all, proved to be fatal, leaving the creature lying motionless on the desert hardpan. The men urged their snorting horses forward so they could examine the corpse. Once they were convinced it was dead and not just playing possum,
got him.
The men began their examination in earnest, noting the beast measured a whopping 92 feet in length.
92 feet is a semi-tractor trailer is 48. So that's nearly two semis back to back. That's long, man.
That's a big, big old thing. But I wonder how much was tail.
Oh, yeah. And the big sail thing on the head, too, right? Where do you put the head to decide where, you know, tip of his beak? But still, that's big.
At its widest, the body had a diameter of a full 50 inches.
So the dude's skinny.
Yeah, long and kind of picture like a wyvern or something.
Yeah. So winged and skinny.
Yeah. Yep. Like a winged snake almost.
Like a quetzalcoatl.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they got instead of a pterodactyl.
Could be the template for the legend.
Yeah.
There were only 2 feet, which were, quote, situated a short distance in front of where the wings were joined to the body, end quote. I had a hard time imagining this, so I decided to picture the feet and the wing configuration as similar to a bat's.
Yeah, I would describe it the same way, where the tip of the wing membrane kind of attaches to the knee, right? So they got you, if you pretend like a human stuck his arms out.
Yeah.
And you had skin going to your, like a squirrel suit, right? Or a flying squirrel thing, where the people jump out of an airplane and fly around like a bat or jump off a mountain.
I thought you gave up that furry.
No, we don't talk about that, Jim.
Well, then back to the story. They estimated the head to be 8 feet long. The jaws were heavily teethed, and those teeth were sharp.
You know what? That's an interesting description. Heavily teethed, right? That's a detail that I don't know that you would stick in, because, you know, we tend to think of things having teeth like us, where, you know, teeth come in and then there they are. But like a shark.
That's why I was wondering if it meant like a shark where it has rows that progress forward or.
And come constantly out, right?
Yeah. Or if it just meant maybe these were just like big and thick teeth, you know?
Oh, I hadn't considered that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure which one they meant here. 140
years ago.
30 years later, yeah. So The eyes were the size of dinner plates. So that's, what, about 10 inches approximately?
Like a giant squid.
Yeah. That's what I pictured. After struggling to pull one of the wings out from under the body of the beast, the men measured its wingspan at about 160 feet.
160 feet.
Yeah.
I think like a normal airplane, you know, like we would consider, back in the days, we called them Piper.
Yeah, like a Piper Cub.
Yeah. Those are like 45 feet.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right here quick. The Piper J3 Cub. Let's see. 35 feet, 3 inches.
Okay, so this thing is...
almost double. Or
four times.
No, wait. What, I said 160. Yeah, not 60. Yeah,
four times.
Yeah.
Jeez, that's big. And he's only 50 inches in diameter.
Yeah, this thing would have been weird looking.
So 4 feet in diameter and 160-foot wingspan. Yeah, it sounds like a quetzalcoatl.
Yeah. The only thing, though, is the wings themselves were featherless and composed of a nearly transparent membrane. And the overall body was featherless and hairless. And it's feathered, isn't it?
Yeah.
The skin was smooth and easily penetrated by a bullet. Luckily for the ranchers.
Yeah. Not so luckily for the creature.
Right. As proof of their kill, one of the men cut a small bit from the tip of one wing and took it home. The necropsy complete, the men resumed their journey.
Jesus, Pete, wouldn't you like go back and get this thing?
Well, hold your horses there, cowboy. The article ended with the following information.
Last night, one of them arrived in this city for supplies and to make the necessary preparations to skin the creature when the hide will be sent east for examination by the eminent scientists of the day. The finder returned early this morning, accompanied by several prominent men who will endeavor to bring the strange creature to this city before it is mutilated.
Well, that sounds wonderful. Good.
Yeah, so they figured the two of them and their two horses couldn't handle it. They probably took a buckboard out or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, the damn thing's 100 feet long. I mean,
before you fans get any jizzier than you already are, let me hit you with this boner breaker. There were no follow-up articles printed by the Tombstone Epitaph or any other newspaper that I could find. So it was either a hoax or they didn't bring it back or who knows what.
Or there was a cover-up.
Yeah. But in addition to that bitch of a message, let me add, contrary to the claims of some websites, there was no photograph of the creature printed with the article. No skin, carcass, or skeleton has been known to have ever been sent east to prominent scientists of the day. Nor is a skin, carcass, or skeleton of the 1890 flying beast displayed in any museum in the U.S. or the world, for that matter.
That is a bit of a Debbie Downer, isn't it? But to be fair, I think there are other stories of I don't know, there's a cryptid called a ropin, right? That's a flying demon or lizard, dinosaur, something.
A ropin? R-O-P-I-N?
R-O-P-E-N. And those are reports come out of the Pacific, like the Pacific Islands. People claim to see those things, and they're supposed to be like bioluminescent or something, too. It's kind of cool.
Well, I've got a story of another one that was found in the States. This one was during the Civil War.
Oh, excellent. Go.
So the Tombstone account is not the only one you'll find if you Google cowboys and pterosaurs.
Okay.
There are sites that claim to have pictures of pterosaurs photographed during the 1800s. One of the first ones you find depicts several bushy, mustachioed men in front of a livery barn, either sitting in front of a pterosaur or standing behind it and holding the wings outspread. They're guys in various positions in the picture.
Guys of various positions of masculinity.
Yes. And the second, actually probably the second two that you'll find, because one is a photo and one is its reproduction, shows several Union Civil War soldiers standing on the wings of a pteranodon that's lying on the ground. Brian Dunning, in the Skeptoid podcast number 605, reveals that both iterations of this second photo are indeed hoaxes. You can listen to the podcast or go to skeptoid.com/episodes/4605 to get the whole story, but I'm going to cherry pick here. Dunning explains how a couple young Earth creationists have embraced this photo as factual and proof of biblical accuracy. Just in case you're wondering what a young Earth creationist is, because I was when I first read it, here's a description provided by the National Center for Science Education. Young Earth Christianists adopt a method of biblical interpretation which requires that the earth be no more than 10,000 years old and that the 6 days of creation described in Genesis each lasted for 24 hours.
Oh, yeah. Right.
They believe that the origin of the earth, the universe, and various forms of life are all instances of special creation. So, yeah, it goes on from there.
Okay, so it's your basic, you know, the Bible is the word, literal word of truth. And
literal, yeah.
Okay.
John Whitcomb, who is one of this pair of young earth creationists, self-published a book outlining the evidence he used to establish his case that the photograph is not a hoax, but rather proof that pterosaurs were alive and kicking, or maybe dead and posing, in the 19th century.
All right, so, I don't know what to tell this guy, but,
As I said, there are two photos depicting the Civil War scene. They obviously portray different individuals. However, the setting and the poses are strikingly similar, as if someone were trying to reconstruct the earlier of the two in a later second session. Both have flaws and scratches and such. One has ragged edges like a ancient manuscript, you know? But, I mean, shit, that's easily added.
Absolutely, anyway. It is.
Or done manually, yeah. So, Dunning makes the argument that the imperfections look to be manufactured, like what someone would think an old photo should look like, so they added these stereotypical flaws.
Scuffs.
Yeah. Dunning took the time to have a maker of Civil War reenactor uniforms examine the picture.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a good idea, actually.
Right. This individual, who's in the know concerning uniforms of the era, found two glaring errors. The soldiers depicted are enlisted troops. However, the men are wearing officers' belt buckles rather than the ovular enlisted belt buckles.
Mm.
And the men are wearing their cartridge boxes incorrectly. I'm quoting from Dunning here because he knows more, and the guy he spoke to knows more than I know about Civil War uniforms.
Oh, yeah. That's why I said it was a great idea to go get him, yeah?
Yep. Well, here's this quote. Worn properly, the strap had a round brass breastplate with an eagle insignia, and the breastplate would have been right in the center of the soldier's chest. Four of the six soldiers in the photo have this breastplate, but in all four of them, the plate is well off center, way down to their right. This suggests that the cartridge box is worn too high on their back. This wouldn't be the case for a real soldier, as that box was quite heavy. All right, just because the soldiers were not wearing the proper belt buckle or wearing their equipment properly does not prove that the photos are hoaxes. But I can tell you, if they're real, I wish my first sergeants would have all been as lenient for sloppy uniform wear.
Yeah, no, they're not. They are not.
Dunning does provide the coup de grace. The photographs were created for the fictional television series Freakylinks, which was aired on the Fox Network from October 6, 2000 until June 22, 2001. The individuals in the first photograph did not have talent releases, so that picture couldn't be used. The pose was regenerated using individuals who did sign their talent releases. According to Dunning, quote, both photos with fictional histories attached also appear in the Freakopedia, a mock diary of the show's main character. This diary was an online companion piece to the television series, and it's visible online.
Yeah, I mean, they leave these websites up, right? People stumble into them and they go, oh my God, look what I found.
Dunning went on to state that both photographs are copywritten by the 20th Century Fox Film Corporation and Regency Entertainment.
There you go. That should clue you in, right?
The John Whitcomb I mentioned earlier issued this statement, which can be found at liveterrasaur.com/LP_blog/archives/8561. On November 4th, 2018, I began apologizing for a mistake that I had made, for I failed to patiently wait for evidence of adequate provenance for this apparent 19th century photograph. I even published a book whose content was largely related to this PTP image. I am sorry for any and all problems that this may have caused.
What's a PTP?
A pterosaur photograph.
that's good. Yeah, that's what it's got to be. A pterosaur.
I have stopped publication, print on demand, of my book, Modern Pterosaurs, because of this problem, or whatever people want to call it.
Oh, really? That's a problem? Yeah, it's a problem. Especially if you're trying to claim it's real and it's on the cover of your fucking book and shit that you wrote without doing any research.
So, unfortunately, as cool as it would have been if this 1860s photograph was real, I'm going to call bullshit on the Civil War pterosaur.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Before we continue, let's pause for a word about Anchor Podcasting. All right, let's continue on with some more contemporary reports of pterosaurs.
Okay, let's.
Before the break, I probably left you all pissy and ready to abandon the episode, if you haven't already. If you did so, then fuck you. I can say that, because if they left, they ain't here to hear me say it. For those of you idiots, for those of you loyal listeners who stayed, please allow me to say this. All hope for dinosaur survivals in the modern world are not lost. Take this article entitled Seeing Things from the July 10th, 1947 edition of the Newhall Signal from Newhall, California. Hell, it was even printed on page one.
Okay, cool.
Now, let me say first that this article came about after local UFO sightings, and the general air of the piece is dismissive of the topic. Light and jocular.
Yeah, they do this stuff, and it's bullshit.
But if you get halfway through it, you come across this.
Matter of fact, they used to see much more wonderful things than flying saucers around here. Addie Lyon can remember when they saw a horrible flying dragon flying out of Lake Elizabeth.
What? Wait. This is embedded in a story about UFOs?
Yeah, I think they expanded it to just weirdness in general. High strangeness.
And this is, by the way.
Yeah.
Addie saw Addie
Lyon.
Addie saw a flying dragon.
Right. So that's pretty promising.
Yeah.
Well, let's continue.
According to Addie, it was along somewhere in the 80s, about 84 or 86.
That's 1884 and 86 for those of you keeping score at home.
Okay, yeah.
When a school teacher saw this fearful whatchamacallit come to the surface of Elizabeth Lake and take off into the air. The school teacher reported the matter confidentially to a few friends. And soon everybody in the north end of Los Angeles County was talking about the horrible hippogriff.
Oh, man. See that? Telephone, telegraph, tell your friends.
That's what happens when you speak to your friends confidentially.
Exactly. I ain't telling you shit.
But what can I say? This witness was a freaking school teacher. That's a reputable individual with a reputation to protect. A veritable pillar of the community.
Oh, Jimmy, you're just saying this because your degree is in education. But I digress.
Well, maybe I did start to lay it on a bit thick. But what teacher would jeopardize his or her career with such a claim?
Well, yeah, that's always been my thing. If they're willing to put their name to it, then there's a problem.
The community at large took the teacher at their word, as you'll see. The article continues.
The news even leaked down to Los Angeles. The Times assigned a reporter to the case. The reporter got up to Elizabeth Lake and blamed if he didn't see it too. He wrote a long piece about it. Said the blamed varmint was as big as a horse, had wings like an oversized bat, bulgy eyes the size of mushmelons.
Which must be muskmelons?
That glowed like the Southern Pacific headlights. And, oh yes, a long woolly tail.
What the hell is he talking about with a headlight in 1888?
The Southern Pacific Railroad.
Oh, okay.
This pterodactyl, or whatever, flew around over the Antelope Valley for a while. Then, under the eyes of a reliable reporter, the monster returned, hovered above the lake for a moment, plunged beneath the surface with a loud hissing sound, raising huge waves, which liked to drown the fascinated observers on the bank, and left a smell of brimstone in the air.
So he had to fart before he went below the water?
He must have. But it sounds like a pterosaur to me. And the long woolly tail actually works in the story's favor. Maybe it wasn't woolly, but rather feathery and appeared as fur to a distant observer.
Yeah, maybe, right?
No one back then would have thought that a dinosaur had feathers. That's a fairly recent claim.
That's true.
So, with my interest piqued, I tried to find this earlier LA Times article. And guess what?
Oh, what?
I found the motherfucker on page 3
of
the August 1st, 1886 edition of the Los Angeles Times.
That is an awesome, awesome thing to find.
It's a pretty big article, so I'm not going to read it all. But here are some of the cherries I picked.
Okay, cool. Go, baby.
First, here's the title.
A Holy Terror, The Fiery Dragon of Elizabeth Lake. A modest story from Ventura. Hideous thing with scales, headlight eyes, and a harpoon tail, now paralyzing the natives.
Sorry, that's an excellent headline.
Yeah, now let's get on to this modest tale. The story came from a newcomer to the area.
You mean like he's not one of the natives, so he's still fascinated by this thing.
Yeah, he was a recent immigrant from the East, I think.
On the evening of the 15th day of July, the moon being then near its full, the little party encamped at the upper end of the lake, about a half mile west of the village. Mr. Simpson says that he noticed the odd, penetrating odor arising from the water. It seemed to float above the lake and to fill the little valley with vague, indefinable forms of mist. About midnight, he was awakened by a terrible commotion that seemed to come out of the lake. There was an awful roaring, he said, like the muttering of distant thunder. There was a great rushing through the air, as of mighty wings, and the wagon was lifted bodily from the ground, carried about 20 yards out into the plain, and dropped, making all the wheels a total wreck. The noise of the rushing wings continued, growing fainter, then all was still. Then jumping ahead in the story, the monster had come upon a drove of antelope sleeping in the gulch, and had at once attacked them. About 10 feet from where Mr. Simpson stood, a fine buck lay bleeding, bitten clean through at one stroke of the thing's horrid jaws. Around another buck, the monster's wings seemed folded, while its long tail, barbed at the end, played around the pair incessantly, evidently seeking to transfix the antelope.
This is awesome. This is his eyewitness account.
His eyewitness account to this reporter.
I'm out. There's something biting antelope in half. I'm out.
Yeah. Skipping ahead a little more.
It was about 30 feet overall, I should judge, he said, and of a warm reddish color, and a long snout and jagged yellow teeth. It had enormous wings, rigged like those of a bat, evidently, long hind legs and a long tail with a seemingly hard barbed point. From its head and neck fell a shaggy mane, and its huge eyes gleamed like two horrid fires. He lifted his gun and shot at the monster. He heard the bullet strike and rebound.
Like in the movies where it goes, pew!
Yeah.
He also picked up some scales, which his bullet or the horns of an antelope might have knocked from the sides of the monster. These scales are round, semi-transparent, about the size of dinner plates, and of a reddish glazed appearance, somewhat similar to ground glass. Mr. Simpson still has them in his possession.
That is odd, because it doesn't fit the other descriptions we've seen, right? Like the shaggy mane.
Yeah. I just wondered if it was like the tuft around like a vulture's neck.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, a lot of the problem, right, is we lack terminology to describe what we've seen if we haven't seen it before.
Right. Yeah, you just go with what you know.
Yep. You run what you brung.
And, you know, I realized they printed some bullshit back in the newspapers back in the day. But why would you print something like this and not label it as entertainment or fiction, you know?
You wouldn't, right? I mean, they're reporting that this guy said that. From their point of view, they've done their job. I mean, it's not their job to fact check.
Especially back then. I hate to say it, but the integrity of some of the journalists, you know.
Yep. There's a difference between a real journalist, like at the Washington Times or the Washington Post, I guess, and the New York Times, which is why I was all jazzed about that UFO story in the New York Times, by the way.
Oh, I thought you were jizzed.
So, whatever.
Well, this water dragon still had at least one more appearance to make. The Independent of Santa Barbara, California, ran a page one story on September 7th, 1886. Excerpts are as follows.
Water dragons, Los Angeles. They are killing all large fish in the reservoirs.
Well, I guess you'd be pissed off if you wanted fish in your reservoir.
That there was a monster in Elizabeth Lake is well attested. Such amphibious creatures from time to time appear, but they are very scarce. A few years ago, one of them appeared in the rivers of southern Indiana. Nothing has recently been seen of the monster of Elizabeth Lake, but for the past 3 days, a creature has taken up its abode in Reservoir No. 5 in East Los Angeles and has scared the courage out of fishermen at that place and destroyed all the large fish.
Wow.
Yesterday morning, while a gentleman was fishing at the dam near the discharge gate, a monster appeared on the scene beneath the surface of the water, and the fish fled in wild affright. There was a monstrous commotion and splashing in the water, which seethed and boiled and rolled in the chopped sea violently. In a short time, a copious amount of blood arose to the surface and covered a large area with bright vermilion.
And that is when I'm out.
There was evidently a submarine battle and some creature got hurt, but the animal did not come to the surface. The man in charge of the reservoir has observed frequent and violent commotions in the water, but cannot describe the monsters. If there are monsters there, it is evident that they are saurians that are sometimes called water dragons. The last seen, near Vincennes, Indiana, was about 5 feet long, with a shockingly ugly head, a stump of a tail, and with a body the size of a child 12 years old. It was a very heavy animal and made a hissing sound when discovered.
You know, that kind of sounds like that, what was it, up in Point Pleasant, off the river there, where the Indians said it lived in the river, right, in the Monongahela River, and it came ashore, and the one guy in the fort wrote the letter home to his parents describing it.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds like the same thing.
Unfortunately, I could not find the article concerning the Vincennes, Indiana water dragon. So, all right, you might be saying to yourself,
but Jim, these are not really contemporary reports.
And you might continue with,
don't you have anything more recent?
And to that, I counter with these two items. In July of 1977, Marion Lowe, a 10-year-old boy from Illinois, claimed that a huge bird tried to carry him off like an eagle carries off a rabbit. The event was witnessed by the boy's parents, two neighbors, and two friends. The bird possessed an estimated 8-foot wingspan. The boy weighed 70 pounds at the time and was carried approximately 30 feet before his struggles convinced the creature to drop him. Now, just for comparison, bald eagles have a wingspan from 5 to 7.5 feet.
Okay.
And adult Andean condors have a span of 10.5 feet, while adult California condors grow to about 9.5 feet wingspan. The wingspan of an albatross can be 8 to 11.5 feet. So, I mean,
yeah. It's not impossible to have a bird that big.
Right. I mean, there are birds with larger wingspans. So,
but not as big as that monster by your discharge gate.
Yeah, right. Unfortunately for science, the birds were not identified as any of these species. So there's a mystery cryptid. Then, in January of 2018.
Okay, so this is recent.
A woman named Cynthia Lee reported seeing a creature in Raleigh, North Carolina, that possessed a long tail ending in a diamond shape and possessing a crest on its head. Its color was dark brown. At least that's what the Herald Sun, out of Durham, North Carolina, stated on a page A3 article dated January 12th, 2018.
That's okay. She gave her name too, right?
She gave her name. So is it bullshit or what?
Well, maybe. Yeah. It's all about, you know, it's all about attribution, right? Do you believe the person or not? That's it.
You know, another modern dinosaur creature, like we mentioned earlier, Mekele Mbembe.
Yeah.
Is thought to be some brontosaurian today in Rhodesia.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great word, isn't it?
It's a fun word just to say.
It is.
And then there's the Jagonini of Gabon, Africa, which is said to be a similar creature.
Well, you know, there are other places in the world that report seeing these flying dinosaurs. In 1997, there are stories in Perth, Australia, of people seeing a pterosaur.
In what year?
1997. And you've got other folks in Papua New Guinea and other places saying they see shit. And I don't know what to tell you.
And even if they get a photograph, unless it's crystal clear, and even if it is crystal clear, it's Photoshop. It's that, you know. So exactly. Even if it's a real photograph.
Or video. Because at this point, I mean, you can do anything.
Just as an aside, I want to throw this out there. Ralph. What's the weather like in Africa? He'll get it if he listens to this episode.
Oh, okay, cool.
There's also supposed to be an ancient Cambodian temple that has a depiction of a stegosaurus carved on one of its pillars.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
But, I mean, that's not even proof because the artist could have seen a stegosaur fossil, you know, and copied it rather than a living dinosaur lumbering through the jungle. So
that's true, but why would he have come up with that, right? And aren't those Cambodian temples like 1,000 years old?
I'm not sure exactly how old, but yeah, they're old. In closing, there are obviously prehistoric creatures living today. I mentioned the coelacanth and the sharks and the crocodilians at the outset of the episode, but perhaps there are even more interesting instances of relic fauna out there than we're aware of, or maybe more than we're allowed to know of. Wink, wink.
Exactly right. Censorship is real. Power to the people.
What Do You Think About is co-written by John Gordos and Jim Dumermuth. Our theme music, In Suspense, is provided by podsummit.com. Thanks to all you listeners. Please take the time to rate our podcast on your favorite listening platform if you haven't done so already. And drop us a line at wdouta@gmail.com or visit our Facebook page and leave a message. That's anchor.fm/WDOUTA. You can also sometimes find updates on releases there. Kind of sporadic. Copyright 2022 by John Gordos and Jim Dumermuth. Was found on the desert between the Whetstone and how did I say that?
Huachua. No, Huachuca. Shit, I don't know what you said.
Huachuca. Between the Whetstone and Huachuca Mountains last Saturday by two ranchers who were returning home from the Huachucas. Mr. Simpson said he noticed the peculiar. Why can't I say that fucking word?
Because it's peculiar that you can't say it.
Peculiar. Mr. Simpson says that he noticed the peculiar alert. Mr. Simpson says that he noticed the odd penetrating odor arising from the water. And just so you all know, there's a monster lurking near my discharge gate, too. But that's a story for another podcast, right, John?
Oh, my God. Again? You worked it in nicely, though. I got to give you that.